Today is going to be our first lecture on the reaction of alkenes. So we already had an introduction to alkenes when we went over the bromination reaction. We're going to do another lecture on electrophilic addition then, where a double bond will attack something that is electron deficient. And we'll start with the same kind of example that I gave first when we did discuss bromination, a simple electrophilic addition. Now for the example, I'm going to use this somewhat contrived alkene. And the reason I'm doing this is because if I have the right kind of substituents that are going to add to the double bond, we're going to end up with both positions of that double bond having stereocenters. And so I've used this example to show fully the types of products that this mechanism will end up producing. So our first reagent I'll show is HBr, a strong acid, something in which the H plus would act as the electrophile. If you had an aqueous solution, HBr would actually start out as dissociated. So if I'm showing it as a molecule here, then when I have the double bond attack the hydrogen, I also need to show the hydrogen bond, hydrogen-bromine bond dissociated. There are two potential products that we could form, and we actually touched on this the other day when we did have our introduction to alkenes. One of those possible products is where you could have hydrogen substitute at the position that the deuterium is in, which would end up generating a tertiary carbocation. The other possibility is that instead the hydrogen adds to where the methyl and ethyl groups are, which would instead cause the formation of a secondary carbocation. Well, we've already discussed several times how tertiary carbocations are more stable than secondary carbocations, so it's going to be the first of these two intermediates that's by far preferable in this reaction. And once I'm done showing the mechanism, when we summarize the six aspects of those reactions that you'll be making a flashcard out of, I'll talk about how this regiochemical behavior, this trend, is known as Markovnikov addition. But let's first complete that mechanism, and instead of focusing on regiochemistry, let's focus on stereochemistry. So if I show just the same initial starting step, even once we decide that the tertiary carbocation would be more favorable, we need to recognize that the double bond is planar. And so you can imagine that the hydrogen might, from the perspective of the way it's drawn at the moment, add on top of the double bond, or it might add on the backside of the double bond. So those are going to produce two different stereoisomers based on that addition. And again, the hydrogen's going to end up where the deuterium is, so that's now going to end up becoming a stereocenter. So I'll show one version wherein I leave the carbon framework in the plane of the paper and have the deuterium pointed out. And then the other possibility would be the hydrogen pointed out, deuterium pointed in. But that carbocation that's formed, either one of those, is also planar. And we still have bromine around in solution, which bromine at this point will now act like a nucleophile. It's not exactly an SN1 mechanism, but it has some similarities to it, where in the SN1 mechanism, because you could have attack from the top to the bottom, you end up with two products. Exact same thing's going to happen here. So I'll show the mechanism written on just one of these intermediates. but recognize it would happen to both of those intermediates equally. And in fact, let me just put down in writing two intermediates form. Due to the alkene being planar. From each intermediate, two products will form because the carbocation is planar. And so if I write all the possible products, I could represent it in this way. I'll first start out with a frame that's in the plane of the paper. Then we have the two intermediates. And so there'll be two products where we have deuterium pointed out, and we'll have two products where hydrogen is pointed out. Then on the new stereocenter that's now formed, once bromine attacks the carbocation, we'll have two possibilities on each of those cases. So the methyl group could be out, bromine and back. We'll have that for both intermediates. And then we'll have the possibility of bromine pointing out. And again, for both intermediates. So the reaction potentially produces a set of four diastereomers. I say potentially because this is a rather contrived case that does give us stereocenters both where the hydrogen adds in and the bromine adds in. But if you had a much simpler alkene, or let's say an alkene where the double bond was at the end of the molecule, well, at the end of the molecule, unless you have deuterium or something else to somehow make a stereocenter, you won't have a stereocenter there. So it's even possible in certain cases where you may only end up with one distinct product. But again, that's why I'm using this particular example to show all the different potential stereochemical outcomes. Now we have four diastereomers that form, but I should point out that these are pairs of enantiomers as well. The first and the last compounds are enantiomers, as well as the two middle compounds. And yes?
Can you force it so you only get one? Because I'm thinking the elimination reactions are very highly uncontrolled. So you're saying it's possible that this is a contrived situation that you could have just one. How would you?
I'll show you an example actually of that next. But I wanted to come back to this idea of enantiomers just for a moment, because I could say in this case, because I started with no stereocenters and only one alkene, that I'm going to end up with an optically inactive mixture, because there's equal probability of any of these cases happening. And since they would all be in equal probability, and since they're pairs of enantiomers, their optical rotations would cancel each other out. But I want to go back to an example that we might have covered the other day and go a bit more in depth to it, because you've got to be careful when you make generalizations of reactions like this to say that you'll always end up with an optically inactive mixture in this kind of mechanism. So that's not necessarily true if you have another stereocenter on the molecule. To demonstrate what I'm talking about, let me start with backtrack a little bit, actually, and talk about an SN1 reaction example. So let's say that I had this substituted haloalkane, a haloalkane that's actually also an ether. And let's say that I react that compound with water and heat. based on the discussion we had last week, would you think that any reaction would be possible? Yes, why? Okay, we have water. What kind of nucleophile is that? It's a weak nucleophile, okay? And what kind of substrate do we have? Secondary substrate. Secondary substrates can undergo SN1 reactions, and weak nucleophiles encourage SN1 reactions. Because water is weak, you're not going to have SN2 in this case, because SN2 is not that great for secondaries. Possible, but not great. And it's a weak enough nucleophile that carbocation can form. Now, let's say for the sake of argument that this methoxide group over here, which, by the way, why is methoxide not the leaving group? I totally ignored it and was looking just at the bromine. Why is methoxide a terrible leaving group? That's right. HBr is the conjugate base of a strong acid. Methoxide is the conjugate base of an alcohol, which is not really acidic at all, in a sense. It's got a pKa value of somewhere between 16 and 18. So it's more like water in terms of its acidity. So if you force methoxide to form, it's not going to really want to be a leaving group at all. So bromide, though, being a good leaving group, can undergo this reaction, which, again, if we're saying for the moment that methoxide has no influence on the molecule, we should, in theory, get a 50-50 mixture of two products. Now, again, presuming for the moment that we do have a 50-50 mixture that is produced, will the mixture be optically active or inactive?
Say that again, sorry.
The question is that if those two products do form an equal quantity, would the mixture end up being optically active or inactive? Ah, but we still do have one stereocenter present, don't we? So whenever we're talking about cancellation of optical activity, we've always talked about enantiomers in the past. But these are not enantiomers of each other because they have two stereocenters, one of which is not inverted as we go from one compound to the other. So yes, the optical activity that might be generated by that one stereocenter might be canceled, but the optical activity of the stereocenter that remains, that is the same on both molecules, does not get canceled, and so it's going to have an effect on the optical. So in, I think, all the examples we've done up to this point where we had substitution, there was only one stereocenter. So if we had an SN1 occur, we said the racemic mixture is produced. This is not a racemic mixture because it's a mixture of enantiomers. So it's not a trick question even. You just got to make sure that you analyze the products to see, are they really enantiomers before you try to say that something is optically inactive. Yes?
At the side of where the stereocenter is?
Yeah. Oh dear, did I create a bad example?
I don't know, I'm just wondering.
They would still be unique compounds, but yes, it's a poor substitution pattern. I really should have put it here. There we go. Now this would definitely hold true, that we would have optical activity even though you had a pair of molecules. So, even if two products form in equal quantities. The mixture will still be optically active. Since it is a mixture of diastereomers and not enantiomers. Or another way to express it is that one stereocenter is not canceled out. So now back to the real reaction that we should be covering, though, electrophilic additions. That was just a comment on stereochemistry, but let's go back and cover now those six aspects of the reaction. First, the synthetic utility. So this first example showed an alkene being converted into an alkyl halide. But we'll in just a moment see another version, almost identical, in which we produce an alcohol instead. And that same mechanism that could be used to produce an alcohol would also be able to be used to produce an ether. In terms of the reagents, you need a strong acid as the reagent, or a weak nucleophile with a strong acid catalyst. So the first version of the mechanism that we saw, the reagent itself, both was the acid source, the electrophile source that began the reaction, but it was also the source of the bromide that came for the secondary attack. The mechanism that we're going to see momentarily is one in which there's water present as a weak nucleophile, which won't initiate the reaction with the alkene, but we're going to have a strong acid source that will cause the alkene to begin reacting. So that's the other set of conditions or reagents that are possible. As far as conditions, this reaction occurs with fewer byproducts if it's shielded from light. Light can cause alkenes to form radicals, specifically allyl radicals, that we'll talk about a little bit later in the quarter once we've covered a bit more of alkenes. It's actually in the chapter, I believe, on free radicals, which we probably skipped over the sections at the time when we covered free radical halogenation. But, so no light would encourage successful reaction. A mechanism, we saw it up above, but let me say that it is essentially cationic and therefore stepwise. Now, of course, you could look at the last step of the reaction and say, now wait, how's that cationic when you've got an anion like bromine attacking? But realize that the rate-limiting step, the most important step in the reaction, is the reaction of the alkene itself, which requires the use of an electrophile and causes the production of a carbocation. Because you make a carbocation, as we're about to see, we're going to have the possibility of carbocation rearrangement. So the same types of consequences as having a cationic reaction show up here. And so even despite that last step, I'm going to classify overall this reaction as cationic in nature. Now, in terms of stereochemistry, that if there's no other double bonds and just the one, or no stereocenters to begin with either, you're going to get a mixture of four diastereomers. Gesundheit. And I'll also express it this way, neither sin nor anti-addition, which I'm going to expand on what those terms mean as we see more of the alkene mechanisms. But sin addition refers to if you have a reaction of a double bond, two atoms adding to the double bond both add from the same direction. So if we imagine, again, a double bond being in the plane of the paper so that the p orbitals are pointed out towards us or ported back into the back of the board, sin addition would be as if both atoms substituted from one side, either the front side or the back. Anti-addition would mean that you'd have addition on one carbon from one side versus one carbon, the opposite side, that something would add to it. In this case, we end up with both possibilities because we have four equally likely possibilities. So we don't have specifically either sin or anti-addition. But I'm mentioning those terms because we're going to see examples of sin or anti-addition very shortly. Yes? Either has to be both from the back or both from the front.
Oh, so the direction in which it attaches must also be the same.
Yes. Yes.
And is that usually how it is, or are there some reactions? I'm just kind of curious. Is there some reactions where there's two attachments, one coming from like the wedge area, one coming from the dash area, but they're both coming to attack but in slightly different directions? Does that ever happen?
Well, that would be anti, and we're going to see just momentarily an example of both sin and anti-mechanism steps. Now, as far as regiochemistry, I'll go ahead and define Markovnikov addition. Which is that substitution will occur at the most substituted carbon. Substituted means having a tertiary versus secondary versus primary carbon involved in that position of the alkene. Substitution at that position. What I mean by that is if we review the mechanism that we've done so far, it was initiated by the double bond attacking an H+. But then afterwards, something did come in and attack the carbocation that was formed. And that object that attacked, you could call the nucleophile. It ends up, therefore, substituting at that most substituted position. And that's because the carbocation wants to form at the most substituted position. So another way of expressing Markovnikov addition is you end up with the product where the carbocation forms where it is most likely to form. And most of the electrophilic additions that we're going to see are going to be Markovnikov addition. Now, there's one other aspect, though, to regiochemistry, which is the fact that you have carbocation rearrangement possible. And so now I'd like to show you a second alkene mechanism. So let's say that I react this alkene with water and this wonderful compound, para-toluene sulfonyl, or not sulfonyl, sulfonic acid. If I'm pointing out that it's a wonderful compound, that must mean I'm going to end up asking something about that compound, which is true because this is a fantastic acid catalyst because it is an easily handleable solid that is organic soluble, it's inexpensive, it's a strong acid, and the conjugate base that it ends up forming is non-nucleophilic. So you don't have to worry about it causing any secondary reactions once it has done its job as an acid catalyst. So let me just point out that if I circle everything except the OH, you might remember that I had abbreviated that as TS before. So para-toluene sulfonic acid can be written as TSOH, Or, in the same way that we shorten that and call the anions from these kinds of structures tosylates, we can call this tosic acid. So let me make this statement again, that tosic acid is an inexpensive easily handled organic soluble solid that is a very strong acid and has a conjugate base that's non-nucleophilic. Which makes it an excellent acid catalyst. So how does the mechanism work? Well, it starts out the same way as the mechanism we saw first at the beginning of class. The alkene is going to end up attacking an H+. Now, notice that I did not write the full structure of tosic acid. That's for two reasons. One, I'm trying to simplify. We could be endlessly worried about where all the different H pluses are coming from and going to in a reaction. But it kind of misses the point of the mechanism, what's happening to the substrate itself. In addition, since tosic acid is such a strong acid, you could even argue that it's already going to be heavily dissociated in the first place, and so there very likely is free H plus floating around in solution. So you've already seen many examples of me showing H plus just disappearing, and what would really be happening is it might end up being associated with the solvent. The same way, I'm generally going to simplify and not show exactly the source of H plus unless it is pivotal to the mechanism. So, since we have the acid catalyst, simplifying, showing H+, which, once that hydrogen adds in, it's going to end up on a carbon that already had two hydrogens on it, which means that no stereocenter is formed in this process. We do end up with a carbocation, but that's a secondary carbocation, which, since it is a carbocation, hydride shifts are possible. And so we'll instead end up with a tertiary carbocation. Water is still present, and so water can now attack that tertiary carbocation. It technically could do so from two different directions, but you have two methyl groups at that position, so you're only going to end up with one unique product. Now, unlike the initial reaction, since we did start with a neutral nucleophile, there is going to be, as we've often had in the past, a final deprotonation step to get us to our product alcohol. So this will by far be the major product of the reaction, and this is therefore one of the downfalls of this reaction, that you, in a sense, can't control regiochemistry. If you knew that this would happen, and predict that this would happen, well, then it would be a beneficial reaction if you know you're going to end up with the tertiary alcohol. But let's say that we wanted to end up with a secondary alcohol. Well, then that means we're going to have to take some other approach. So this was just to show that we can have carbocation rearrangement. So any questions on this first version of electrophilic addition? We saw two slightly different variations, one where the reagent, again, was the acid source, and now this one in which the acid is provided by a catalyst instead. But essentially the same mechanism. Yeah?
So that position of where the carbocation is at the tertiary, that's the most stable. But
yes.
In this reaction, it takes time for it to rearrange, right? Or is it instantaneous? Because I'm thinking the water could
is still the major product that's going to form.
So now let's see a second type of reaction where we could end up with just a secondary alcohol. And this has the somewhat daunting name of oxymercuration demercuration. As you can guess from the name, there is mercury involved, which means that this is not necessarily the most environmentally friendly solution to the problem. But it is a classic reaction that is still used at least in laboratory settings, and it's in all the organic textbooks as usually the initial example of this second brand of mechanism. What I'm referring to is what we saw back when we did do the bromination reaction. We had the first type of mechanism I presented at that time, which in fact is the same simple electrophilic addition. But then when we did discuss bromine, we talked about these interesting cyclic intermediates that end up being formed. That was a distinct type of mechanism. Well, it turns out that mercury, this particular mercury agent, also goes through those same cyclic types of intermediates. So let's see, in fact, what would occur. To again fully see the stereochemistry of all the different products, I'm going to use that same starting alkene, the one that had two different alkyl groups on one side and then an alkyl and a deuterium. This at least sets us up so that we have a secondary versus tertiary position, and we're again going to end up with stereocenters at both positions. The reagent used is mercury acetate, which let me, over the side here, show that acyl, is an abbreviation often used for CH3CO. So acetic acid, for example, can be represented as ACOH. Acetate, therefore, ACO-. So the reagent involved is mercury acetate, mercury 2 acetate, and there are a number of ways of writing this mechanism. Because let me describe what happens first, and then we can understand why there are alternative ways to write the mechanism. It's because mercury is so big and squishy, like bromine is, that when it attacks or is attacked by a double bond, it essentially does not end up at just one carbon or the other. There's an intermediate that forms where it straddles both of the carbons, forming a cyclic intermediate. Well, so you could show the double bond attacking mercury and kicking off acetate as a leaving group. But what's often shown also to highlight the fact that you're forming a cyclic intermediate is to show a pair of electrons from mercury attacking back in response. In other words, this is the way it's often represented. Now, what will be the charge of mercury that results? Well, it's effectively now made two bonds with two different carbons. But it's only lost one bond when acetate is kicked off. And so in the intermediate, the mercury is going to end up being positively charged, with acetate providing being around as a counter ion. Now, we have the same kind of problem writing these cyclic intermediates that we would have run into with a bromine reaction, which is how are we going to properly show stereochemistry? Because we're starting out with something that's flat. We have this idea that, yes, mercury could sit down on the front or the back of the alkene, but then how are we going to represent this properly with dashes and wedges on paper? What I'm going to do is I'm going to say that the methyl group and ethyl group, we're going to pretend that they're immobile somehow. And so that if the mercury was to come from the front, it's going to end up pushing the methyl and deuterium in back, so that the mercury itself would be in front with a wedge. Or we can imagine that it's going to come from the back, which means we'll write the mercury with a dash. It'll end up pushing the methyl and deuterium towards us in the front. that will allow me to write the ring itself as either wedges or dashes while keeping the long chain, the main chain of the compound, in the plane of the paper. So in other words, we get the following. Oops, and I left out an acetate accidentally. Now, we were discussing sin and anti, those terms earlier. So for just this portion of the mechanism, this much of it would be considered syn addition, because notice that the mercury is pointed the same direction from either carbon in either of the two intermediates that we form. It is, in fact, physically impossible to have a three-membered ring in which one bond is pointed one direction, a second bond is pointed the opposite direction, and somehow those two bonds connect to the same atom. The bond itself would have to twist in space for that to be possible, which it's not. And so you can't end up with a three-membered ring where one is wedged and one's dashed. Not physically possible. So the initial step of this reaction occurs as syn addition. Both new connections to where the double bond had been located point the same way. Now, what happens next is in some ways simple, in some ways kind of a complicated story. Because there's both a stereochemical consequence of this reaction and a regiochemical consequence. The regiochemical consequence is that this still ends up being Markovnikov addition. One of the reagents I have not yet shown is water. This is a reaction that overall is going to produce an alcohol. Water is going to be involved. Water is going to attack this three-membered ring. If I'm telling you that this ends up being Markovnikov addition, then that means that water is going to end up attacking the tertiary position. And in fact, it will only attack at the same time the mercury ring is open. Now, given that behavior, that it's attacking at the tertiary position, and that it's a simultaneous attack of that nucleophile on the mercury that, in a sense, ends up being a leaving group, why would that be unusual? Why would that seem strange with what we've just recently learned? That in this reaction, let me just show you the mechanism, what occurs. And in fact, before I show you the mechanism, let me write down that this intermediate has the name cyclomercurinium ion. Which is just a technical way of saying a cyclic, positively charged mercury ion. Mercury, mercurinium, cyclomercurinium. So the reaction step that happens next is that water attacks the ring at the more substituted position, simultaneously kicking open the ring. And of course, this happens with the enantiomer as well, And yes, for the future, if I'm saying plus an answer my own self to save time, you may do so your own self when you have to write this mechanism for an exam. So the product we end up with, which I'll go ahead and show both products at least, is where mercury ends up at the less substituted position, and the attacking nucleophile, water, ends up at the more substituted position. Actually, I will wait and write that second intermediate after I do one last step, which is allow the hydrogen and water to come off so that we can at least end up with a neutral intermediate. Now I'll go ahead and write the two products. Which are enantiomeric. And just to be complete about it, let me show you that the two things added in, the OH group and the mercury, overall, this addition occurred as an anti-addition because of the fact that the ring does not open until water comes to attack. If the ring opened by itself, then we should, in theory, get four different products. Because each of the two possibilities, mercury pointing towards us or away from us on one stereocenter, would then be accompanied by water in either of those cases being pointed towards us or away from us. So we should end up with four possibilities. But we don't. And the explanation for that is, again, the ring does not open until the attack occurs. So overall, this reaction occurs with anti-addition. And let me expand over here why. The ring does not open until the nucleophile attacks the ring. Now, there's also no carbocation rearrangement because a carbocation never forms. But now let me go back to the question I was asking earlier, which if this is the mechanism, if this is a concerted step where water is attacking at the same time that mercury is opening up, what reaction that we've seen would closest resemble this? SN2. But SN2 does not occur for tertiary substrates, and yet it is the tertiary position in which attack most occurs. What would be going on here then? But what happens is this cyclomercurinium ion is not balanced. The two bonds for mercury are not the same length. Because if the bond going to the tertiary position were to break, you'd form a tertiary carbocation, which is more favorable. Since it's more favorable, that bond would more easily break. Versus the other bond, which is to the secondary position. Because it's to the secondary position, it doesn't want to break as much because you'd form a secondary carbocation, which is not as favorable. So the tertiary position, because it's more favorable, the bond to it is weaker and longer and more ready to break. The secondary position, because it's not as favorable to form a carbocation, that bond is stronger and shorter and not as likely to break. And this is why the ring preferentially opens of one place versus the other. So if I just draw the triangle to show this, And let me show a simplified example of it. And I'll write both of these possibilities that I just mentioned. That the bond to the tertiary position is longer and weaker than the bond to the secondary position. Because the potential formation of a carbocation is more favorable at the tertiary versus secondary position. Realize also it's a three-membered ring, so it's strained, and it's positively charged, so it's even more strained. So the ring does want to open, but one side again is weaker than the other, and it's the weak side that ends up getting attacked, which explains why it looks like SN2, and it still has, in fact, inversion of stereochemistry at that position. But it's not truly SN2. And the fact that the ring is strained is why it is occurring at a tertiary position. There's one last step of this reaction, which I know we're about out of time, but let me show you really quickly. This step of the reaction, you are not responsible for the mechanism, because it's a radical mechanism that is not necessarily clear, or at least it's not shown in any organic text I've seen. What you should know, though, is because it's a radical mechanism, it's going to end up potentially scrambling the stereocenter at which the mercury is located. But what happens, and I'll show it just with one of the enantiomers, so we use the compound sodium borohydride. It's a compound we'll encounter a lot next quarter. It is a source of H-, which easily attacks carbonyl bonds, CO double bonds. It will also, however, displace the mercury. This is, in fact, the demercuration step of the reaction. So hydride, in some way, effectively displaces the mercury, totally knocking it off the molecule, which means the overall transformation we were able to accomplish The overall transformation is we made an alcohol at the secondary position like I wanted to. I'm just realizing that there are several structures here that I forgot to put my deuteriums in for. So we're completely out of time. We'll continue with alkene reactions on Thursday then.